Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, good evening. Welcome to The Uncommon Shaman with Mud Toe Sasquatch. And that's who I am. Both of those things, Mud Toe Sasquatch, because that's the name that was chosen for me, and...
Mark the Rabbit Hole!
Broadcasting live from the fog of Neptune comes a wascally rabbit, exploring the unknown, traveling the astrological landscape, visiting secret worlds, dispelling the English language. So put on your bunny ears and hop down the rabbit hole with your host, Mark Matheny.
Mark, Mark, wake up, Mark.
And good evening, and welcome to Mark the Rabbit Hole. I am Mark, and you're in the rabbit hole. Sorry for the little audio mix-up there at the beginning. Apparently, a previous show was plugged in there. But anywho, that was our friend Todd, who has a show on Friday nights called Mud Toe at Midnight. And so I guess that was a brief 10-second sample of it. Alrighty then. So tonight, our guest will be Lynn from Psychic Focus Sessions, and she will be joining us shortly. Her website is psychicfocus.blogspot.com. She has a lot of great stuff on there. If you enjoy coast to coast and conspiratorial type topics and things of that ilk, then you will enjoy our guest tonight. And let's see here, kiddo. So just a few quick announcements, news items. The next show will be Thursday, July 14th. Still looking to confirm a guest for that show. And then Thursday, July 28th, I believe we will possibly, at least that week sometime, we will run a repeat of the show with from last year with our good friend Tom Benedict. Tom Stones is, many of you know him as, from the local conventions and everything. Tom passed away. It was a few months ago now. So we're doing a little local ceremony for him that weekend. I think Saturday, July 30th, I think it is, at Whetstone Park, if you're in the area. And then that Sunday, the 31st, is the gathering of 1,000 drummers, which will be, oh, I'm sorry, we're not calling that anymore. It's the gathering of dancers and drummers. Long story. And that will be at Alum Creek State Park. So come out and join us the last Sunday of July. There'll be dancing, drumming. There'll be food trucks out there. There's a beach at Alum Creek State Park. Nice area. You can go jump in the water and cool off. Bring stuff for shade. There's not much as far as shade, but it is a good area. We will have a good time. Also coming this Monday, the 4th of July, we will be at the Something Something Annual Doodah Parade. And if you are familiar with that, you know that will be a good time. If you are not familiar with that, there's a doodah parade. It's in California. It's been going on for many years. The one in Columbus has been going on for, I think, at least 15 or 20 years. But it's kind of a satirical 4th of July parade, if you will. You are, if you've not seen everything in this lifetime, You might want to show up for that because you just might likely see anything that you haven't seen before. So, let's see. Just a real quick astrological weather. The moon is in Taurus right now. Heavy preponderance of earth and water right now. Very little air and fire. We have Saturn and Sag retrograde, Uranus and Aries no longer forming a trine. Right now, Jupiter and the North Node are exactly trine Pluto in Capricorn. Jupiter and the North Node being in Virgo. So as I've preached for the last year and a half, now is the time to put things in place, especially if you were born in the 1960s decade. And even more specifically, if you're born in the 1965 to 1968 area. And so the Sun, Venus, and Mercury are all in Cancer right now. Neptune and Chiron are in Pisces. Mars just went direct last night in Scorpio at 23 degrees. So lots of water out there. If you've been around people in the last 24 hours, you probably felt that. Mars station direct, we'll say the intensity level picked up just a smidge, if you will. So we'll probably come back to some of that stuff a bit later, I believe. So our guest tonight is Lynn from Psychic Focus Sessions. And I believe she is on the line right now. Are you there, Lynn?
I am. Hi, how are you?
Hi, good to talk to you again. Lynn is one of our good friends of the show. I think this is about her third appearance, if I'm not mistaken, on here. And we're always delighted to have her on. How you been
Thanks
doing?
Thanks for having me. I've been doing good. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, absolutely. We love having you on. Lots of good topics to go through tonight. I had kind of posted on my Facebook page a few weeks ago some ideas for topics that people may want to hear a little bit about. So I kind of gave Lynn a little list of things. And kind of perused her blog a little bit. So we're going to get into a myriad of different topics, we'll call it. Of course, lots of excitement in the last 24 hours with the Turkey airport deal in the last couple days. And then, you know, something really odd that happened this morning. We got a news alert that there was an active shooter at Edwards Air Force Base in Baltimore, Maryland, and said that the medical facility there was on lockdown. And I was getting those alerts for about 2 hours. And then I heard it was just a drill, and then all news articles of it kind of disappeared from the headlines. And it was odd because I believe the situation started with somebody at the facility tweeting that there is an active shooter in the medical facility. So if you're doing a drill, I don't know why someone's going to tweet that out, but that's a whole nother. We've got plenty of other juicy things to go into tonight, and we'll follow up on that at another time. So for those of you who are not familiar, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, Lynn, and how you got into this and your blog.
Okay. I'll try not to take too much time because, you know, there's a whole story, a whole history behind it. But basically, you know, growing up, I always knew I was a little different. I felt things, I saw things, I experienced things that most people around me didn't. And like most kids, especially going into being a teenager, you want to be like everybody else. You want to blend in. You want to be what you think is normal. As I get older, I think there is no true normal. We just are who we are. But nonetheless, I just wanted to be like everybody else. So I suppressed it. I tried to ignore it. you know, I developed my own little tactics to kind of mute it out. Like, I never was around the silence. I couldn't stand silence because when it was quiet, it just made it worse. I could hear things more. I could feel things more. It's almost like you're more in tune with yourself, which is true. When you have quiet time, you are in tune with yourself. So I developed my own little coping mechanisms and just kind of suppressed it as much as what I could. Well, in my 20s, when I met my husband, he was very interested in all of the paranormal stuff, and you know, I would share stories with him, and he would always want me to elaborate. Well, then I started getting kind of weirded out, because the more I talked about it, it kind of reopened a door that I'd tried to close. It all started coming back. I would see things at night. I would feel things. My dog started barking randomly at certain areas of the house. I mean, it was just a very uncomfortable situation for me. And at one point, I even remember telling him, I wish I could give this to you and you could have it, because you're the one that's so interested by it. I didn't necessarily view it as a gift. It was almost like a curse, because it was hard to deal with. And, you know, so I kind of went through that phase, and, you know, after talking with him and him really encouraging me and me trying to let go of some of my fears, because I always thought everything that was supernatural or that was not on this earthly plane that we see, I always associated it with being bad. You know, we see all these things in the media, poltergeist and paranormal activity and all the hype about all this stuff. It's always negative. Very rarely do you get a beautiful spiritual spin on it. So when I opened myself up to that, it became a little less scary. And one year it was either our anniversary or Mother's Day, because they all fall around the same time frame, he wanted to buy me a reading, which I never had a reading before. And I went and I did it. It was Open That Read Me. She also offered a psychic development class on Thursdays. And he and my husband encouraged me to go to that. And when I went, it was like everything made sense. I understood why I felt the way I did. I met other people who had similar experiences, and I didn't feel so alone. Plus, I started to learn how to harness it or control it or use it for good. And then from there, I would come home and I would share what happened in class, and he would always tell me, you need to journal this. You need to somehow keep a record of it, because then you'll see how you're either growing or learning or comparing experiences, all of that. So he's the one that actually encouraged me to start this blog. And by doing the blog, I also solicited, you know, people to ask me just random questions, because that's how you get practices, by doing it and going through different exercises. So people started to, you know, email me random questions and do all of that, which I love, because it was just every question imaginable, you know, things I would never even think of on my own, but really cool stuff. So I would do that, and I would make the readings public, and I offered private readings too. Well, then I got to where so many requests come in that I couldn't handle it all, and I had to start charging to do readings to compensate for the time it pulled away from my family. And then it just became this really cool, awesome, kind of a, I don't even know what I want to call it. This blog is wonderful, and I'm so grateful, and I'm so blessed that it even has bloomed into what it is. But people still, they ask me questions, and I do free public readings. I donate my time to that, and then I do personal readings on the side, and it's kind of like my own little business. But it's almost weird, because I don't necessarily even think of it in terms of a business, because it's really, I want to help people. You know, so it's really people coming to me, and I do what I can to help them, to give them insight or give them a little glimpse into maybe a perspective that they hadn't ever thought of. So that's how everything kind of blossomed into what it is now.
Yeah, and I believe subscribers, well, I'm sure they can sign up on your website and get your daily blogs delivered to their inbox, which I have done. I greatly enjoy your blogs, and you seem to have a door into my brain, because you always seem to have a blog on things that have been going through my head in the previous couple of days. So I greatly enjoy reading your blogs, and I would highly recommend, if you listeners out there haven't signed up already, to go to psychicfocus.blogspot.com and sign up to Lynn's blog, and you'll, if you forget to check it, it'll just get delivered right to your email inbox. How convenient.
That's cool. Thanks. Thanks for saying that, Mark. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we've talked several times over the phone, and I've talked with your husband too, who is my mental twin, I believe. So
I too.
It's like having me there all the time, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, let's see. Do you want to pick a topic, or do you want to just ramble through what we talked about?
I'll let you go. You gave me a nice little list, and I was sort of looking through it before I called in, and you know, I'm good with whatever's piquing your interest or whatever people in your circle are talking about. And then I'm kind of interested too in the astrological spin on it as well, because I get what I get, but I also, you know, there's so much more to it. There's so many different layers and depths to all these topics. So no, this will be cool.
Yeah. So I think the first topic that I'd sent you was Bilderberg. So,
oh yes.
Just a few weeks, and I should have listed all this back out so that I don't mess it up. But yeah, a few weeks ago, we had the Bilderberg yearly convention happened, and this was a couple days after the Orlando shooting, I believe. Yeah, I mean we could do 7 hours on this, but so the Bilderberg meeting is the meeting of the world's elite. After they come out of there, they give their little coded messages, and then stuff starts happening. So we can get into all the weird animal stuff that's been happening since then. But, you know, we had the Orlando thing, and then, you know, the continued push for gun legislation, and the Democrats sitting in on the house of the on the floor of the House, and then there's just so much stuff happening all the time. Oh, then we had the Brexit was right after the Bilderberg meetings. Then we had the little economic hiccup, we'll call it, last Friday. And then the attack on the Turkish airport a day or two ago. So I just totally rambled all over everything right there. So give us your take of what goes on at the Bilderberg meetings, or what you see happening there.
Well, sure. And I didn't actually officially do a blog on it, but by all means, I mean, I kind of looked at this and thought about it, you know, like I said before the call. And, you know, when I envision this group and I think about what is going on there, one of the biggest things that I get, and I don't know if you saw my posting on it, is the Economist magazine. And that is a magazine
Yes.
that comes out at the beginning of the year, and they have this cover on it. And this cover is so intricate, and it has all these hidden cryptic symbols. And, you know, I'll spend forever looking at it. And I can imagine from your
Yes.
perspective, as much as
Me
you
too.
Know it's astrology, how you look at it. And so when I think about this group, that's the first thing I imagine is this magazine. And it's as if this group gets together and they plan and they plot what they're going to do and how they want their plan to, you know, unfold. And the biggest thing that I remember and that stands out to me when I see this, and then I, you know, I see Bilderberg and then I see this magazine, is that picture of Hillary Clinton and how they're trying to shape her to be the president. You know, they recently released all those reports saying that she was innocent or whatever it was, talking about Benghazi. It's like they're trying to do whatever they can prep her up and shape her to become the president, because she's a moldable person. She will do what she has to and make the deals that the powers that be or the cabal or whoever you want to call them will make. And so I feel like one of their big agendas is to make sure that she becomes president, you know. And then you have this whole Brexit thing happen kind of after that. And part of that feels a little planned out, but I feel like there's some unintended consequences to that that maybe they don't realize, such as other countries wanting to stand up and maybe they want to revolt and become independent as well. But I think that we'll end up going in and having like economic hitmen go in and try to destroy him if that really happens. But I see a lot of those small little things going on. But, you know, this gun agenda, that's huge too. And all over that Economist magazine, they had the rainbow colors and they had all the rainbow stuff. And I remember after I did it, one of my people from my blog, they had emailed me and they said, hey, look at this magazine and look at what the current events are. And they're right. And I feel like the Bilderberg Group, they are very much, they're the ones that are, you know, pulling the strings to make all of this happen, because they have a bigger agenda to make sure they retain their power no matter what happens with the economy, no matter what happens with anything. They still want to have their stronghold, and they're going to do what they need to do and keep the people in place that need to be in place. So that's what I really think that this is all about, a plan, and we're seeing it unfold. But Hillary, that's going to be a huge one. And, you know, this gun thing is pretty huge too. They, from readings that I did, they're trying to get it passed to where they're going to start taxing people based on either the guns that you have or by barrel length. And it's going to just be this big revenue thing. It's going to cause chaos. People are going to want to buy guns, or certain economic groups aren't going to be able to afford guns. And it's almost like they get people segmented into these groups of the have and the have-nots, because who can afford to have them and who can't. And, you know, that's going to be a whole new mess too. But bottom line, the Bilderberg Group, they are outlining what it is they want to do, how they're going to get their revenue, how they're going to have their key people in place, and how they're going to keep power.
Yes, yes, I totally agree. And when they get out of there, there always seems to be lots of chaos starting a few days before or after the Bilderberg meeting. And then there is craziness ensues, I guess, is all we can call. And we may have to talk about the I didn't give you this topic, but we may have to come back later and talk about the Brazil Olympics. That I would say that is going to turn into one of the biggest fiascos in history. That is just from, you know, first couple, you know, the athletes go to the Olympics, you know, early to kind of scout stuff out and practice at the places and stuff. And in, you know, the opening ceremony, which is a big Illuminati ritual, that's what it is. That's on Friday, August 5th. But, you know, since they gave Brazil the Olympics, God, I can't even remember. A couple athletes got mugged and robbed at gunpoint a couple weeks ago. Where the water sports are, they have found that the beach was covered in trash and pollutants. They found the water was tainted, and some of the people who were athletes who were there swimming and rowing, I believe, got ill. Then, oh God, what happened? Then we had the, well, first of all, their economy is crumbling. And then I believe one of their president or one of the heads of their government is under investigation for fraud and may get outed. And then they had the beginning lighting torch ceremony, like they light the first one, then I think that the torch travels around the country or something, and then they light the rest of the torches at the opening ceremony. Well, the jaguar is one of Brazil's symbols. They had a jaguar there, and it at the opening ceremony, at the opening torch lighting, not the opening ceremony. And I guess the jaguar got off its leash and killed the jaguar because it was charging someone. And then today they had corpses floating up onto the beach.
I've heard that. I'm actually surprised I haven't seen any questions come through on my blog yet, but I heard about that. And then with the Zika virus, some of the athletes are pulling out and not even going.
Right. I mean, yeah, I don't know how many bad omens it takes to to make somebody not want to go somewhere, but I do not. If I won free tickets, I would not be going.
That's, yeah, it's craziness. It's just really unstable. And my heart kind of goes out to him, to be honest with you, because the people there, I feel, are good people, you know? It's just they're surrounded by this circumstance of just one thing after another. It's partly governmental-induced. It's partly economic-induced. It's environmental, you know? But it's like there's good-hearted people there. So I feel sad for them that all of this is going on. It's just a bad situation.
Right, and I believe Rio de Janeiro is the first South American city to get to host the Olympics, if I'm not mistaken. So, yeah, it's a unfortunate situation for the people there, but my goodness, it looks like there's a lot of black magic stuff going on behind the scenes there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hopeful that everything turns out good because, I mean, their economy, it would be great for their economy to have all that influx of people and stuff if they can handle it, but I know the logistics of all of it are just, they have a lot of challenges definitely that are facing them, but I don't know. I'm like you. I'm very skeptical, and I'm just kind of sitting back and watching to see what happens. I don't know.
Yeah, the thing I was reading today said that they're actually defaulting on some loans right now. Well, and that's another thing that just happened is a couple hours from now, Puerto Rico bankruptcy. And I believe ownership isn't a great word, but it's the word I'm going to use. Said ownership goes back to the crown for Puerto Rico. So they have defaulted on their loans as well. So it is a financial quagmire out there, right, to put it nicely. Okay, so what, since we started to touch on it there, Brexit, do you feel that was a staged vote or to purposely collapse the economy there, or what do you see happening there?
I think it is, yes, semi-sort of staged, and yes, to semi-collapse the economy, but I feel like what it is, you know, you have England there. I mean, I feel like they want to be their own thing, you know, they have the monarchy there, they want to be their own thing, and I feel like they're going to succeed, like they've got people backing them. So ultimately they're going to be all right. But I see Europe being, you know, really struggling, and it's almost like they want to somehow stick it to Germany or stick it to, I don't know. Germany's the one that stands out to me. So yeah, to answer your question, I totally feel that this was intentional and staged. And like I had mentioned before, I kind of see some unintended consequences of this that maybe they didn't realize when this happened. And as odd as it is, when I think about Brexit, my mind snaps to a shot of the United States, and I see Texas thinking, man, I wish we could just pull out. I feel like Texas wants to be their own thing, too. It's going to be next to impossible to actually happen, but I feel like other places, they've got their eye on that, and they see what they did. And, you know, I think other places, there's going to be some upheaval that are going to have to be contended with.
Yeah, I totally agree, because Germany is an interesting one. They seem to be doing really well economically a couple years ago, and were kind of moving to the forefront in Europe. But now they seem to be, you know, and Merkel was in really good standing. She seems to be struggling now, and Germany seems to be struggling. And so I'm seeing like Germany and France being the next ones to want to jump out of the EU. And so I can see that being, yeah, just a line of people wanting out of there, I think. And so then you. Yeah, and then, you know, shortly what you would end up with, you know, if Germany and France and stuff get out and England out, then you're just going to have all the, like, the countries that have really been broke and really had financial struggles, mm-hmm. Greece and the others. So you're going to just have a bunch of broke country sort of. My day job for the last 21 years has been in export and international shipping. So I kind of follow this stuff pretty close. So this is also going to come to realigning customs and trade agreements. And I think you're right about every couple of years, Texas seems to want to secede from the U.S. too. I would not be surprised if they make another run of that. But I kind of feel like the Scotland vote last year, year before, was kind of rigged. I was really stunned that they didn't jump out. So I would bet that they, I'm kind of hearing rumblings that they may take another run at being out of the EU. I'll just out myself here. I'm not a big fan of trade agreements, NAFTA, any of them. In my opinion, from what, you know, there's been over a million jobs lost in the U.S. in the last, 15 years that can, I feel, easily be linked to NAFTA. You know, these trade agreements in general, I feel that they're put in there to bring down the more powerful countries to keep them in line so that they can be controlled. A lot of these trade agreements, I feel, just favor the smaller or weaker countries. And while that may sound, oh, good, you know, balance and, you know, fair play and everything, but it's not. What that does is, you know, you want the countries that have higher standard of livings to keep growing and building. You want the bigger countries pulling up the littler countries that struggle, not having the little countries pulling down the big ones. And so then you just end up with a giant mess and, you know, loss of jobs for the larger countries. And I think you're right. England's going to thrive. Yeah, they had this hiccup here and people freaked out and everything, but I think we're going to have let me see what happened. Okay, we may have lost a couple seconds there. We'll fill it back in. The short version of my 5-minute ramble there was trade agreements favor the lower countries. I think they're put in there to pull down the bigger countries and to manipulate the bigger countries, lower healthcare standards, lower wages, lower, you know, outsourcing of jobs from the bigger countries. So I think that covered most of, I think we were off the air there for a few seconds. I think in the long run, it will be good for Britain. And, you know, my bad analogy I came up with is, you know, when these, and, you know, we're just in NAFTA with, you know, it's just Canada and Mexico. We only have two other countries. I mean, all the countries involved in the European Union, you know, my bad analogy would be, you know, it's tough enough to go to the grocery store and get, you know, all the stuff you need. But what if, you know, what if every time you made a grocery list, you had to call all your relatives and cousins and get that grocery list approved? I mean, it's just, it's crazy. It just slows down progress.
Even as you were talking, I got this visual of, okay, so you have, you know, England pulled away, but then you have all these refugees, and that's part of the intentional destabilization too of Europe. You have all this influx of people in there. There are no jobs. You have all these people. That hurts all these, you know, economies as well. So you have England pulled away. They've got to rebound, get themselves situated, which they'll do. You have these other countries, Germany, France, and all them struggling because you have all these people there. You have violence. You have, you know, all the crime. There's no jobs. There, all this kind of stuff going on. And you're right. Some of the bigger countries, they're going to want to pull away as well and do their own thing. And then the smaller countries that can't make it, what happens? The big rich companies come in and gobble them up. And it's just a way to kind of rearrange what's going on. And I think that's real. There is such a bigger plan, and I feel like we're just scratching the surface. They've probably got a 20-year outline of what they really want to happen. But these refugees, that was kind of like starting the influx of phase one. You got England pulling away, and it'll just be, I'm curious to see how it really pans out, but I really think the more, you know, countries that have the money are going to go in and gobble up the small ones and pretty much own everything. So we'll see.
Right, right. And that's a tactic that gets used a lot is with these, this has happened a lot with some of the struggling South American and African countries is, you know, they kind of set them up as they're struggling. They set them up with these really horrible, you know, we complain about our interest rates on our credit cards if they're, you know, 14% or 20% or whatever. The International Monetary Fund and the international banks will come in, or, you know, the Goldman Sachs people come into these countries and give them loans to help try to stabilize them for a little bit. But it's such exorbitant interest rates, there's no way they can ever pay them back. And then these countries default. And then the only thing they have at collateral as collateral is there are only things that are really of value, which is, you know, land, water, air, you know, the utilities type thing.
Yeah.
Right. And so then they lose control of those. And then you have, when you lose control of your water and natural resources and land and, you know, whatever coffee fields or whatever your biggest export is, when you lose control of that, then you have, then you no longer, once you've brokered that, you no longer have the ability to pull back out of it.
Mm-hmm. It's so true. And it's so sad and very unfortunate for these countries. But, I mean, that's the reality of our world.
Yes, yes. I mean, and this is, you know, I mean, just taking the African continent, I've turned this into like a big economic discussion, like I know what I'm talking about. But the you know, the African continent has been this way. The African continent is very rich in resources, gold, diamonds, coffee, you know, all kinds of stuff. But the, just like happens here, the 1% takes hold of everything. The 1% has control of everything. They keep all the rest of the people poor. And you've got the 1% Africa has lots of millionaires. You don't ever hear that, but it's the 1% manipulating everything, just like we have here in, you know, the United States and the UK and you know, other places.
I think that's what the whole Ebola thing was in Africa. We were just trying to get a foothold in a part of Africa to get some of their resources, and now the disease is magically in hibernation again or under control, or at least it's not here in the US. So I might be misspeaking for what's going on in Africa, but I believe that it was intentionally started and happened there just so we could go in there. It's like we cause the problem and then go in and save the day. And, you know, other rich countries do the same thing. You create the problem, but then you're the savior too and the hero that can go in there. But in the process of going in there, you get your boots on the ground and you grab a hold. And so, yeah, I totally think that's what the whole Ebola thing was.
Right. I agreed. And then the, what's the new one? The Zika virus, which
yeah,
has been around forever. And it's just now.
That was an immunization that just went bad, but I think
right.
At least that's what I got from my reading. I can't state that as fact, but from my intuitive perspective, that's what I got.
That's what my research has led to as well. Is I think Monsanto was in there spraying stuff and whatever, and they kind of weaponized what was a, you know, just a regular strain of the flu or whatnot. And now it's, you know, they're trying to turn it into something bigger, or at least a fear propaganda, if mm-hmm. nothing else. Okay. So, but stay with us, folks. We'll talk about pink fluffy clouds and bunny rabbits later.
Mm-hmm.
We'll pull out of this darkness. Yeah, so did you do any readings on I know you did one on the Orlando event, and have you done one on the Turkey airport?
I didn't. And sometimes, I mean, I know people are really interested in all these events that go on, but every once in a while, I kind of have to back off, because it just, I feel like we are so bombarded with negativity and this fear. And even though each reading is very different and there's different motives and different people involved, it's all kind of roots back to this thing of fear-mongering. And I worry that I don't want to support it or perpetuate it. And I always tell people, you know, just take this stuff in as information. Don't necessarily take it to heart and feel heavy about it, because they just, it's like they're trying to keep our vibrations down. They're always spreading fear, and through fear they gain power. If we keep our own power, then it keeps it from them, you know, and I'm meaning like the government. If they keep you scared, then it's easier to take your gun rights. I mean, so many of our liberties and so many of our freedoms are taken because they scare us, and then they trick us into thinking, well, it's for your own good, and you know, they make it plausible in your mind and people agree to it. But I just feel like it's more of that. It's more, let's get them scared, we'll get them terrified, and then, you know, we can gobble up some more of their freedoms, and they'll do it willingly. All of our stuff we give up, we do it willingly, and it's all based around this fear. So I didn't do a reading on that one. I did do Orlando, and it even took me about a week, because I thought, man, I want to go down this path, but I know a lot of people are interested, and it's, you know, important. I just, I didn't do the other one yet.
Yeah. So what did you see out of the Orlando event?
Well, Orlando was kind of strange. I have never seen one where I felt like half of them were actors, but then they also sprinkled in real people as well. It's as if they needed to have a loss of life because too many people are getting smart, and they're comparing, you know, they'll see a picture of a victim and think, did they really have a family? Or, oh, I saw a picture, the same picture with someone up in, you know, Boston when Sandy Hook happened. It's like people are getting too good at cross-referencing faces and photos, so they had to have some legitimate loss of life in there. Then they also had in their crisis actors, the people who are going to be in the paper, the people that are going to be interviewed, you know, so they kind of had a melding of both to give it a little more authenticity. But yeah, so I do believe it, you know, it really did happen. It was a combination of real people versus crisis actors. And it's truly about gun control. You know, they've tried to prey on our fears with children, you know, and then they did the movie theater one, and they've, you know, they're hitting all these different targets, so they got to pull at a different heartstring. So then they went to, you know, the gay community, and they're trying to pull at those heartstrings. It's like they're just trying to pluck a little here and pluck a little there, and hopefully they'll get enough emotion on the uprising. You know, it used to be like a black-white thing, or a, you know, they're pulling races into this, or they'd pull all this other stuff. So now they got to try a different tactic, and this is one they haven't done yet. It's new, it's fresh. They wanted to see how people would react. So I do believe that that group was targeted, and I think it was partly crisis actors, partly real people. And when I was asked to try to figure out who was actually at the root of all of it, people were asking me a lot about this G4S. And even though I think that there's some shady stuff and they're in bed with Israel, and I believe there's some darkness with that too, I couldn't connect that. But I did get that it was like this secret dark group affiliated with our CIA. Now, if the G4S is affiliated with our CIA, then yeah, that would be a better confirmation. But I couldn't mentally link the two. But it's all about gun control. They are so desperate to get gun control and get taxes on our guns, because that's huge, huge revenue. We have so many guns out there and so much ammo out there. If they can tax that, they would get so much money off of people for that. That's kind of in a nutshell what I got.
Yeah, I totally agree. I went down the rabbit hole with that G4S as well, and they were involved with let me see if I can remember all this thread I had. They are the biggest security employer in the UK and in Africa. They are the third biggest private company in the UK and Africa, and they supposedly do security everywhere. They were signed up to do the 2012 London Olympics security, And then they did not have enough people, and they actually got in trouble and had to pay this huge fine because I believe the city of London had to hire British and Scottish military to do most of the security. So I don't know how the biggest security company in the UK doesn't have security people. That seems a little odd. They seem to recruit a lot out of prisons and high schools and reform schools. There's on their Wikipedia page, if you go and look, they had hired, and if anyone's at home looking, it's the letter G, the number 4, and the letter S. It's G-Force. It's just 3 characters. Someone had hired them for some contract work, and they actually sent a group of barely trained teenage girls over as their security. And so this company immediately, you know, fired them and sent them back. But if you kind of – if you trace back to Orlando too, at the end of May, just a few weeks before this, they actually were running a scenario where pirates in Tampa, just a little bit south of Orlando, this happened in Tampa at the end of May, they were in a scenario where some pirates kidnapped the mayor and his wife, and this G-Force was supposedly they were supposed to be involved in that training exercise. And then two, if you follow, G-Force has it's subsidiaries all over the world. They're in over 100 countries. One of the U.S. subsidiaries is, I'm going to screw this up, but I think it's Argonbright. And they have this, they're owned by a subsidiary, one of the companies that G-Force had merged with a few years beforehand. But they were in charge of doing security at 2 of the airports on 9/11, where hijackers boarded the planes. And then they were at a couple of the other airports too, but they were involved in 9/11, but they were not in charge of doing the, you know, security checks on people. Yeah, to me, this is just like another version of Blackwater or Kraft International, where they're kind of just a front to what came to my mind was, and I'll stop babbling here. What came to my mind was there's an old Saturday Night Live commercial for, it was kind of a takeoff on FedEx, but it was like for, it was a company that delivered packages. But like if you were late getting your package out or didn't want it to get there on time or something, they would like, you would pay them and they would deliver like a damaged, beat up package a few days late to kind of get you off the hook. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what I feel the G4S is. They're like kind of hired. If you want some kind of shenanigans to go on, you hire this company to kind of pose as a security force, and they'll just let your perpetrators do what they want.
Interesting.
So that was kind of my take on them. One of the other, we'll jump to something a little bit lighter for a second. Kind of lighter, I guess. One of your other, I'm really obsessed with ancient Egypt. I've got like ridiculous amount of Egyptian stuff in my house. One of your blogs you did, I guess it was Monday the 20th, was on ancient Egyptian symbols and how they are kind of passed through down into society now. Do you want to touch on that a little bit?
Well, yeah, someone had asked me, they, like you, were really into ancient symbols, and they didn't know why they were drawn to them, but they were drawn to them and wanted to know if maybe I had a different take on it or what I got. And it was kind of cool because when I tuned into it, it was like I got this image, and you can see this wall, and it would have everything in like hieroglyphics all carved out, and you could see this story emerging, but then chunks of it would be gone, but they felt like they were intentionally gone. And it was as if there's this story of maybe our history or teaching us some kind of technology, or maybe it was the story of how they built the pyramids, like whatever it may be, but there's missing holes in it and key components are gone. And I got during the reading that it's like the power of the bee or the cabal or, you know, whatever name you want to put on these people, they've extracted this information and sort of hoarded it for themselves. And maybe they haven't figured out or fine-tuned how to use it or what to do with it, but nonetheless, they've kept it. But it's like this story is being told, and why people are drawn to it is because it resonates as true. You know, I believe in our soul, even in our DNA, we all know the truth. We understand the history. There's so much depth to it. You know, we've lived multiple lifetimes in multiple ways, whether it's here on earth or up in the heavens, regardless. But all of that stays with us through every incarnation. And so when we touch on truth, we know it. It resonates as true. But the sad, unfortunate thing is it's like someone is manipulating it so the full truth can't be shared. And it was kind of a cool reading how I saw it all coming together. And I just feel like there's some knowledge that's been taken from us. That was the frustrating part. I wish I could put the puzzle together, but my clairvoyance wasn't that precise to be able to do it. But it was a pretty cool reading, and it actually made a lot of sense, and I had never really thought of it in those terms of why we're so connected to Egypt and all of this symbology. And it's because it tells a story. It tells about our history. We just haven't figured it all out.
Right, yeah, I'm very drawn to the Egyptian stuff, and a lot of, when you go back, a lot of our things that we use now are taken from ancient Egypt. I mean, I think they were one of the first ones to use perfume, feminine hygiene products, many other things the Egyptians evolved. And even now, look at our money. Look at the Time Warner symbol. I mean, the Eye of Horus shows up on so many things that you can't even count. So I found that blog to be particularly interesting. Another question that had been posed by somebody on my wall was they wanted more insight on to how to like spiritually ground, and how do we spiritually ground ourselves with all this chaotic energy that's up there.
The best way to do this, and sometimes it sounds almost too simple the way I say it, but really meditating is the best way to ground yourself. And, you know, some people really struggle with it because, you know, the monkey mind or the monkey chatter is always going on and they don't know how to quiet their mind. And one of the things I tell people, you know, it doesn't have to be an official way where you sit in a certain position and you face north, south, east, or west. Like, it doesn't have to be that sophisticated. It can just be sitting quietly in your yard without having electronics buzzing around you, without having your phone, without having anything. Just sit in your yard and listen to the sounds you hear. If you can walk outside barefoot, do that. Drive in the car and turn your radio off. You know, if you can just shut down the outside chatter and just be at one with yourself, that can do amazing things. And put the intent out there and visualize yourself grounding to the earth. You know, if you're walking around your yard and you're barefoot, envision yourself grounding to the earth, or sit in the grass and envision it. So much is done through intent and your mental vision. Another great resource that I tell people, and it's free, go on YouTube. They have guided meditations. They have just meditation music. You know, you can find about anything you want. And I tell people, too, not to give up. Maybe you do something and it doesn't resonate with you. You don't like the sound of a drum, or you don't like, you know, whatever the music is or someone's voice. Keep changing it up because there's countless options on there. But meditating is really the single most way to ground yourself. Just take a few minutes of quiet time, turn everything off, turn off the TV, get away from your tablets, get away from all that. Even standing in the shower, just in pure silence, and just thinking about how the water feels when it hits you and envision yourself grounding to the ground can make a huge difference just that few minutes a day.
Very good. Yeah, I find sometimes just touching my bare feet to the earth kind of helps me center myself a little bit. And yeah, and you can get the little black shungite bars too to put in your cell phones to put into the case to kind of block some of those waves as well. Because it is where, I mean, we're in a wave minefield where we're just constantly have different radio and sound and electronic and radiation waves coming at us from, and I think that's done on purpose to kind of, you know, keep us scattered and from connecting with our real energy there.
Oh yeah, I mean, power lines and the cell phones and then the Wi-Fi everywhere you go, you know, McDonald's and everywhere is blasting free Wi-Fi, and the Wi-Fi, it's almost impossible to get away from it. So if you can just get in nature and get, like you said, your bare feet in the grass, that, for me, and everybody's different and everybody has their own thing that works for them, I find that incredibly grounding. Reading a book, just holding a book, just put the electronics down, go old school.
Right. Okay, so I think we're going to take about a minute break here so you can get a drink of water and catch your breath for a second. And we'll be back in about 60 seconds with our guest, Lynn from Psychic Focus Sessions.
You are listening to WithInsightsRadio.com, your free online resource for achieving self-discovery and inspiration. With Insights Radio is a listener-supported radio station, and your donations are greatly appreciated. We cover a variety of topics, interviews surrounding the metaphysical and holistic and natural medicine, alternative healing modalities, and much more. Thank you for tuning in to WithInsightsRadio.com.
Okay, so we are back with our guest Lynn from Psychic Focus Sessions, and we're kind of running down some information on her blogs and running through different topics. An interesting one that has come up to me several times recently I just found out there was a name for this like a week or so ago. It was called the Mandela effect.
Yeah.
And that is loosely, that is with all the frequency and timeline shifts that we've been undergoing. It's people are noticing, another person has a term, time living dead people, where an actor or someone dies and we feel that they have already died before, or we'll notice slight name changes for movies or characters or books. I think Interview with a Vampire is one of the recent ones. And so it's like we're time shift, alternate memories, alternate history. So it's like almost like we're tapping into different, the Bernstein Bears is another one. Somebody posted another one today. But these things keep coming up. It's like there's a road by me that I swear had changed names like overnight one time. What's your take on these the oddities? Are these like timeline shifts, or is it confusion in our brain, or are we tapping into alternate timelines, or what do you see going on there?
It is like a timeline thing, and I mean, kind of confusing, so just bear with me to explain this. You know, in a spiritual sense, time is, it's like the past, present, future sort of coexist. It's not necessarily linear, but it's linear for us here on Earth because that's how we see it. We age and we see that progression, so things move in a linear perspective. But when we are in spirit form, it is a completely different measurement of how time is. There really is no time. It's like everything just is. So here on Earth in our 3D body, it's almost as if, like if you flip to the movie The Matrix and you get these little glitches and things just don't line up. It's like we all move in this momentum on this certain timeline, and then it's almost like a glitch. And some of us will experience time, you know, events on a timeline a certain way, and others will experience it a different way, and then both paths ultimately meet back together and sync back up. And that's where the glitch is, like where that bubble is of where the times differ. And then when they merge back together, it's like it's reset itself. It's like time's always wanting to reset itself when these glitches occur. So when you, for example, experience an actor that you've seen, they've passed away, you see a big news story and all this stuff, and then next thing you know, 6 months later, you're having a conversation, you're talking about this actor that passed away, and someone else says, what are you talking about? To the point where you guys have to go and research it on the internet to see who's right. The timelines have merged back together, so it's just really like a glitch in the timeline, but it will reset itself, and then when it resets, that's when all these questions come out. Like people start comparing notes, and you know, people think, man, am I going crazy or what's going on? And you remember things vividly and you start to doubt and question yourself. But that's, you were living through that glitch, and it's, then it's reset.
Right. Yeah. The original one I was thinking of is the Anne Rice books. And the first interview with a vampire is now interview with the vampire. And Bernstein Bears has a different spelling, and there's you can Google and find lists of them, but there's all kinds of weird things like that. So that's interesting. That's interesting. Okay. Another, and I saw a story on. On this today as well, another topic that comes up is, I guess, weather modification and CERN and HARP.
That's definitely in full force. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No. You're fine. So CERN is the Large Hadron Collider. I think it's supposedly up and running now. It took them years to get it and keep it up and running. They say it's just for like basic scientific purposes. Others of us think that it's you know, they're trying to create black holes or time jumps or portals. And I'm going to post this article today. So there's one thing that's happened recently is there's a large cloud that is seen over CERN a couple days ago. Bizarre cloud formations above the Large Hadron Collider, and some are saying it could be that it's working and they're trying to open up a new a portal. So what do you see going on there? What do you see happening?
Well, at first I see that it was based on science and they were trying to, you know, break down a molecule or whatnot and find, you know, this God particle. Like they were trying to find where does everything start, you know, everything can be broken down infinitely, but how far can you break it down? So I feel like it started on that premise, but then they realized there is way more power behind it than just that. And it's almost like they're trying to manipulate time in some way. So I guess maybe that is a version of a portal, but it's like they're trying to, you know, you hear about these time machines, and it's not like the old-fashioned Back to the Future time machine, but and essentially they're somehow they're able to manipulate time through this you know, thing that runs through this enormous collider, you know, high speeds or whatever. So I see them doing that and trying to maybe eventually create some kind of a time machine, but right now it's like they're trying to alter time with this. But the unintended consequence is when this thing's running, it creates this energy that is absolutely unreal. Like, I feel like I wouldn't want to be around it. When I tune into this, I am so glad that I don't live near it, because it just feels off and it feels wrong. And, you know, there was a plane that went down over there. I think, was it German Wigs or something like that? I think what it was called. But when it went down, I believe CERN was active, and it was semi-sort of near there. And I remember feeling like the air, there was something wrong with the air, like there was no air there to hold up the wings. So when this thing's running, not only are they really kind of playing with fire, but they're altering the atmosphere around there too. So it's much bigger than just the facility itself. It radiates for miles around this thing. I mean, it's creating energy that's not like normal energy. You know, they're pumping this out that's man-made, and it just really it messes with a lot of natural flows that are supposed to be going on.
Right. I mean, the biggest worry for me, I mean, they admit that it's, you know, kind of unparalleled power that, because this thing goes on for like miles. I mean, this thing is gigantic.
Right.
And so at best case scenario, they don't know what they're doing or what it's going to do. Even if you want to take all the conspiratorial black hole time shift things out of it, they don't know what they're doing, because there's no way that no one's ever built a machine this powerful before.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't really know what the results would be. And I think that's proven out by like the first 30 times they tried to get it up and going, it crashed on them.
Mm-hmm.
And there was just continual,
it was incredibly dangerous.
Right. So it, best case scenario, we don't know what we're doing. That's that's the best case scenario with that. Okay, so somebody else had asked. Everyone's very familiar with Area 51.
Mm-hmm.
People may not be as familiar. And that is known as the underwater Area 51. It's the Atlantic Undersea Test and Evaluation Center. And let's see, that is in the Bahamas. The installation faces the tongue of the ocean, which contains deep water hydrophones used in Altec's underwater testing. So we have lots of reports, and most of these things we're touching on, I'm putting a link on my Facebook page and in the chat room if you want to play along at home. So there's lots of UFO sightings, lots of bizarre activities reported, all kinds of reports of crazy stuff coming out of there. What do you see happening over there?
Okay, so I was like most people, I think, and I hadn't heard of it until you had sent me that name in my email, and I thought, wow, that's pretty cool. And I looked it up on Wiki, you gave me the link, and I pulled it up, and then I just kind of read a little snippet about it, and then kind of zoned out to figure out what's really going on there, because ultimately I don't believe that they really I mean, if it's a secret underground thing, they're not going to tell you on Wikipedia what it is that they're doing. So as I tuned in, I got this image of them taking different weapons. Some of them are man-made from here, and some of them are ET technology that they've either stolen or been able to find that might even have come from Area 51. But the reason that they have to do this underwater, I got, was because when you get deep enough underwater, you can semi-sort of simulate what, like not having gravity feels like. Because I get that you can't go up into space and necessarily test a ship because you need people to do it, or you're not able to remote control it, or maybe the Van Allen belt, you can't get through it and it creates problems. But I felt like there was a lot of hindrances to being able to test things in space, but the other way to do it was to be able to go underwater and be able to do these things. And then if there's something explodes or it airs out, you're deep underwater, you can kind of sort of hide it unless you end up creating a tsunami or something like that. But I got that it provides the medium that they need to be able to test the weapons that they have, and it's weapons that they don't want other people to know that they have. It's very secretive. Like I said, some is stolen technology, some is man-made here. I mean, it's just a combination of things, and that's what they're doing. So I feel like it's like a weapons testing area that somehow the way, however deep they do it or what they're doing, can kind of simulate what it would be like in space. So I don't know. I don't know if that even makes sense, but that's like how it came to me.
Yeah, nope. Makes total sense. When you were talking about that, I kind of flashed back to the Malaysian Flight 370 aircraft that kind of originally disappeared, not necessarily in that area, but lots of people reported that it landed at kind of a secret base. And so that would kind of make sense that they would do that kind of testing and stuff. And yeah, who knows? I mean, that's the area too in the Bahamas where, you know, supposedly Atlantis was, you know, at least roughly. So yeah, very interesting, very interesting. Another question that was posed, and this topic is getting really hot. In fact, I did like a 2-hour show on it a month or so ago. But exopolitics, space programs, aliens. There's Hillary Clinton's campaign chairperson is a huge X-Files fan, and all this stuff keeps coming out about Hillary supposedly wanting to release UFO documents, and I'm reading all kinds of stuff, none of which I could be able to verify, but one of my previous guests said that the cabal, if you will, wants her in place so that she can be the one to release the UFO stuff that they have to come out, you know, some point in our dealings with extraterrestrials. So one of the theories is that the cabal wants Hillary in there because she's going to release the information and how they want it spinned and how they want it spun. Spinned isn't really a word. And, you know, so they can kind of do pre-damage control, if you will. What's your take on that?
Well, I definitely think we are beyond the time frame to release this information. I've always gotten through my readings that, you know, we as humans were given so much time, these people in power rather, were given so much time to tell the truth that they exist, and this full disclosure that everybody keeps talking about, putting it off and putting it off. But I guess some countries have been a little more liberal with being honest about, you know, there being life there and what's really going on. But some of them were kind of hem-hauling, for lack of a better word, around and not releasing the truth. And it's frankly angering them. And I feel that there's some heat and pressure on people to get this information released. But you're right. They have to do it in such a delicate way because it's going to change a paradigm for a lot of people. People that, you know, maybe their religious beliefs can't comprehend that there's UFOs or ETs out there. You know, it puts the church in a very delicate spot. It, you know, just people's belief systems are going to be very different. So you're right. It does have to be done in a delicate way. And I get that's why they haven't done it, because the church doesn't want to give up power. And they're going to lose some power when they realize that there's something out in the heavens that's not always angels. I mean, there's more to it too. So it's going to be a very touchy, very sensitive thing. I wasn't aware that they were going to let Hillary do it. I didn't feel like it would come from her. She doesn't feel like she's trusted enough by people that they would necessarily believe her. I do think the information needs to come out, and I feel like it's going to happen soon, or it's going to be forced, going to show themselves, and there's not going to be a delicate segue into, hey, they're here. I feel like they're just going to, their ship will be there, or something drastic is going to happen. But yeah, definitely the time is up. I can't get a clear image how they're actually going to do it, but it is going to have to be forced to be done.
Yes, I'd agree. We're long past due on that. So let's see, that another question that someone had posed was about flying humanoids. And interestingly enough, you had done a blog recently. You do a really awesome thing called I think it's usually Five for Friday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where I just, brilliant idea. You'll just have, if I have the theory right, you'll just have people send in like pictures. You'll pick five pictures on Friday of weird anomalies and stuff that people have sent in, and you'll kind of do a reading on just on those five pictures.
Yeah, there's this guy that he lives in California, and it's probably been a year and a half or so ago. He contacted me, and he said, "Hey, Lynn, would you be interested in doing this Five for Friday segment every other Friday?" So he goes by the handle of Dada on my blog, and he's the one that contacted me. He's an author, and he writes books and so forth, and he wanted to know if I'd be interested in doing it, and I said, "Well, hey, that would be great." So he's actually the one that sends me the pictures. And so usually on Wednesday morning, I'll reserve a spot and he'll send me the pictures and just give me like a one line, like, "Hey, what do you think of this?" Or, you know, "Look at this picture. Does this look fake or real?" You know, he'll send me his little list and I'll go through them and do a reading. And then I'll send him the audio tape, just like I would any other reading, and he'll listen to it. And then he'll make the description as what you read on my website. So yeah, he finds this stuff, and I don't know where he finds it, to be honest with you. I don't know what news sources he's using, but he finds the coolest, strangest things, you know, and he'll lump them up, or if he'll see things on an off week, he'll just save them in a folder until we do another one. But yeah, that's actually how we do it. So it's kind of cool, because it's one of my viewers, and we've become really good friends.
Cool. Yeah, so your post from June 20th, or I'm sorry, if I could read properly, June 15th, has actually a few pictures of unidentified flying objects and flying humanoids.
Mm-hmm.
Then we've got a quote from John Keel's awesome book and movie, The Mothman Prophecies. What are these flying anomalies? I mean, and there's tons of reports out there of people seeing giant birds, giant humans. You can YouTube and find videos of some of these. Do you want to kind of go through one, or maybe?
Sure. There were two on that particular day, and they were both pretty unique and interesting. The one, this guy was in his car, and, you know, he glances over, he sees this thing flying, and he thinks, what is that? And then he realizes that it isn't a bird, and the shape of it and the way that, you know, how nimble it was in the air and the motion that it made, and he looked at it and was like, they made eye-to-eye contact, and this thing was flying, and, you know, it really, he was kind of weirded out but didn't know what to think. And when he got, you know, done with his trip, he sketched out what he'd seen and kind of told his story. And it was odd because he didn't know, should I be scared of this thing? Should I be enamored by it? Like, what was it? And it was, you know, he's just driving, then it finally disappeared. And so when Dada sent me the picture and I was going through it, what I got was that this creature, like I had explained how time sort of is layered upon each other. It's like the past, present, future are all the same. So we have all these different timelines that are intermingling, but we are seeing what happens in this 3D reality right now. But like this guy, he was driving. He's in our 3D reality. This creature sort of jumped timelines and appeared in this spiritual kind of sense, as if I got this creature this being had a higher vibration and was in a different timeline, and somehow he kind of glitched and got in our timeline for a second, and then, you know, it was like a 5-minute thing, and then it glitched and he went back to where he was. And I feel like Bigfoot works the same way. The Bigfoot can come into our reality and kind of fade in and out. And, you know, Bigfoot's actually a very spiritual, very high vibration being, and just is smart enough not to get caught because he doesn't want to end up on a mantle. Like, he's scared of humans. But back to the original story, that's kind of a similar concept as to what happened with this flying humanoid. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I mean, there's, you know, it's like we talked about the different radio waves and stuff. I think there's, and even it ties into the grounding conversation earlier. You know, we have all these different frequencies and stuff that we can reach. And my bad analogy here is, you know, it's like a radio. If you have a radio in front of you, there's, you know, hundreds of different radio stations you can tune into, but all of the stations exist there. You know, those radio stations don't disappear or don't exist when you're not, just as you flip through the dial, you're tuning to a slightly different frequency. And I think, you know, we've all had the experience of when you drive under a bridge or something, you kind of get that bleed through where you'll get like two stations on top of each other, or one, you know, they'll be fading out. And I kind of think that's how the, you know, different dimensions and timelines work. I think we're able to, when we work on it, we may be able to tap into these different timelines and different dimensions and things. And I think maybe the Bigfoot people maybe have mastered this to where they can tap into different frequencies and different visual parts of our reality.
Mm-hmm.
So very, very,
very
interesting stuff. Yes, I would agree. I would agree. Okay, so I think the last thing we'll kind of touch on here, I think the last topic was the all the deaths of these holistic doctors.
This is just really sad. Really sad.
Yeah, and so I think there's at least 40 of them now. So it's almost like there's an active hit going on them.
Well, there is. I mean, sad as it is to say, there is more money to be made in the medications and fixing the symptoms than there is a cure. I mean, if you really stop and think about it, when is the last time we truly cured something major? Or do we just do an immunization or a drug or, you know, fix a symptom. And you know, Big Pharma does not want this information getting out. It's almost like, you know, when back in the day they got a car that, you know, the electric car, and it was super efficient, and, you know, the oil companies wouldn't even let it go into production because it would have killed the gas industry if cars that were that efficient got out. And this was, I think, in the 70s or 80s. I don't know. There's a movie on it. But this is the same kind of thing. You know, Big Pharma doesn't want cures getting out there that aren't making a ton of money. So it's just, it is sad. My heart goes out to these doctors. I wish them all the love and light possible to, you know, protect them and guide them and make them feel safe and keep doing what they're doing, because I know they're helping people. But ultimately, it's like they're going up against this animal, and all their lobbyists and representatives and anybody that they're affiliated with.
Yeah, I agree. I'd read a few years ago that there's like 500 lobbyists in Washington, D.C. for every politician. And you're right. I mean, I was one of my projects is one of my classes coming up here is, you know, I was going to total up how much money has been spent on cancer research and Alzheimer's research and ALS and all these other ones. And when's the last time they cured something? I mean, there's got to be hundreds of billions of dollars a year going into research on, you figure they would like cure something at some point.
I know.
You know?
There's no money in that though. If they cure
yep.
that, I mean, think what they charge. I know someone that went through breast cancer and had to, you know, have surgery and mastectomy, chemo, all of that. Her medical bills are over $1 million. $1 million. If they could have prevented it or cured it, I mean, it is. It's sad and it's insane. I mean, our whole medical system is just, that's a whole new show, but I mean, honestly, that's what it boils down to.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on there. I mean, then, you know, they'd prescribe medications, which then, you know, cause other side effects, which need additional medications, which have other effects. And then, mm-hmm. so, you know, it is, it's sad. You see people and they'll be on 30 different medications for, you know, they just have one problem, and then, but they now have 42 mm-hmm. side effects that need medications. And
right.
so, yeah, I agree with you. It's a scam on most levels of it. Okay. Well, I think that kind of wraps up the topics I had given for you. I have for you, and I didn't want to keep you too long. I know you've got other responsibilities there to take care of. But I want to thank you for coming on and spending time with us, and tell people if they want to get a reading. And I've gotten a reading from Lynn. It was. You know, it's impossible to do them, you know, in that many readings in person, but you get you send her the questions and you get a recorded reading back that you can listen to whenever you want and go back over. That's really a good deal. So I highly recommend Lynn's services. So tell people how they can get a hold of you or how they can request a reading from you.
Oh, sure. If you go to my blog, you can schedule online and then send me an email and I'll give you my information. My blog is psychicfocus.blogspot.com. And through there, you're able to schedule an appointment. If you want to put a blog request for just a general interest topic, you can put that there. And if you wanted to email me directly, which you would need to do if you scheduled an appointment, you'd need to email me your questions. My email is your, Y-O-U-R, psychic focus, psychicfocus, @gmail.com. And really, it's as simple as that. You're on my schedule, and when your day comes up, I do your reading, and I email it back to you. And it works pretty slick. And if you have questions, I'm always here, an email away. I'll answer you. I usually, you know, can respond to questions within a day or two. And typically readings are about 1 to 2 weeks, depending on how booked I am. So everything works fairly streamlined. Like I said, I'll help you out and guide you if you run into any hiccups along the way. But for the most part, it's pretty easy.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank you for spending some time with us. We'll definitely want to have you on later this year, maybe around the presidential election. Maybe we'll get some insights on to what you see happening there, some strange astrological energy around the election, of course, being in November. There's all strange energy. So we want to thank Lynn from Psychic Focus.
Hey, thanks for having me. It was fun. I appreciate it.
Yes, I think we always have a entertaining show when you're on.
Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah. Okay.
Good. So, a good time.
Yes. I enjoy it too. We seem to run across similar topics.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting to get a backdrop on it, and just with the, you know, the time shift thing, there's so much astrologically, there's so much mutable energy out there right now with so many planets in Pisces, Virgo, and Sagittarius. That kind of rules our Saturn, which is in Sagittarius, rules time. And with all those planets in mutable signs, it's like everything's kind of wobbly, kind of shaky, like it's hard to kind of keep the train on the tracks, if you will. So I think that's why we're having so many breaks with reality from people and so many crazy events happening. So we want to thank Lynn from Psychic Focus. I will be back in 2 weeks. If you're in the Columbus, Ohio area, come out Monday to the Doodaw Parade. I promise to have a special conspiratorial based costume for that. It'll be downtown Park and Buttles in a short north area. And I will be back on July 14th with a guest yet to be determined. I got a few I'm whittling down. And then, so I have a class sometime this month at Mystic Nirvana in downtown Westerville. So I went to
Mark, time to return to the ship.
I guess it is time for me to return to the ship. So thank you, everyone, for listening, and we'll be back in 2 weeks.
I have this feeling, man, because you know there's a handful of people actually run everything. That's true. It's provable. It's not a fuck. I'm not a conspiracy nut. It's provable. Handful, very small elite run and own these corporations, which include the mainstream media. I have this feeling who's ever elected president, like Clinton was, no matter what your promises you promise on the campaign trail, blah, 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 when you win, you go into this smoky room with the 12 industrialist capitalist scum fucks who got you in there, and you're in this smoky room, and this little film screen comes down, and a big guy in a cigar, roll the film, and it's a shot of a Kennedy assassination from an angle you've never seen before. That looks suspiciously off the grassy knoll. And then the film, the screen goes up, and the lights come up, and they go to the new president. Any questions? Just what my agenda is. First, we bomb Baghdad. You got it.